What up, what up, everybody? It's Double G for the Fight Game Podcast here with John LaRocca after Quake by the Lake. I was confused. I keep saying, I was like, is it Quake by the Lake? Is it Quake at the Lake? I know Paul Fontaine is getting it mixed up, but I made sure it's Quake by the Lake. The AEW Dynamite featuring the return of one CM Punk in the main event. So it looks like we're getting our all-out main event of Punk and Moxley. And we'll talk about the whole match and everything and how the angle came to be. I thought that Punk would probably be doing this match because if there was an inkling that he wasn't doing it, it didn't seem like they had anybody naturally ready to be in that match. So I was pretty sure it was going to be him. But very thankful that it's him because I think it's going to be a really fun main event for All Out. And I'm looking forward because I'm going to be there live.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm happy. I felt like when he did that interview at, I think it was the San Diego Comic-Con, where he said he's behind the schedule and he shattered his ankle, whatever it was. I felt like that was just like, you know, just try to put people off the scent that he's going to return soon. Because if he's like, oh, you know, I'm getting better, like people are going, okay, when's he going to return? In the next couple weeks? Or, you know. So, that's why I was like, eh. And plus, I think the whole interim thing would have been all cleared up if he was that injured. He was not going to be back for a very, very long time. So,
yeah.
They kept having that open. So, that was always, I always felt like, that. I mean, that's the biggest match they can do is Punk versus Moxley at the All Out pay-per-view. And it, we'll talk about it as we get there, but I thought they closed the show strong.
Mm-hmm. All right. So folks know, John and I usually talk wrestling news for about 20 minutes before we do our Dynamite review. A little bit of a different show tonight because at the tail end, you're going to hear an interview with me and Scott Edwards. Now, if you are in the Joshi community, you probably know Scott. People know Parker Klein, who writes the Dynamite Report on this very website. He's also big in the Joshi scene. And Scott does a podcast for us, for Fight Game Media, called Five Star Joshi Show. And it's very popular. People look forward to this show. And so I wanted to have him on this show. You know, we have the F4W engine behind us because I wanted folks to get who don't know Scott to kind of get used to his voice a little bit, because I think he's doing really good stuff. But also at the same time, Stardom, Joshi, there's the New Japan show with Stardom, the crossover show. That stuff is kind of bubbling, and I feel like there are a lot of people who are like, you know, I hear a lot of great things about Stardom, but it's kind of hard just to kind of jump in. I don't really know how to do it. I don't know what goes on. I don't know any of the stories. And so that's also why I wanted Scott on, because I feel like Stardom especially is kind of on the cusp of maybe getting a lot more attention in the U.S. And hopefully this partnership with New Japan will help, and we'll see some Stardom matches in the U.S. at shows, you know, with the New Japan Strong branding. So Scott's going to jump on at the tail end, about 30-minute interview, maybe just a tad bit longer. So John and I are going to hit the Dynamite review. We'll throw it to Scott. But before that, I have one thing that I wanted to get to because I thought it was so interesting. And it made me think. It was a tweet that I got from somebody who listens to us, probably, or listens to me and Dave. His name is Jason Lee, his handle on Twitter, at Jason Lee. And he sent me a note, which was based off of something I said on We're Live, Pal, with Andrew Zarian yesterday. We were talking about something that you covered on Take It Home, which was this Mance Warner and John Moxley match. There were like different sides of the spectrum as far as what people thought about that. You know, some people really loved it. Some people are like, who the heck is this guy? You know, why is he on TV when I've never seen him before? And basically what I said is, I know who he is. I couldn't remember if I've actually seen him wrestle. I've watched MLW TV, so I'm guessing that's where I would have seen him. I've watched some GCW stuff. I don't know if I would have seen him there. But I basically said, it's a great opportunity for him. This is the biggest thing that he's done. He's on television against their champion, who's the biggest star in the company right now. If he hits a home run, he may get a good deal out of this. So I looked at it from that perspective, because that's how I look at wrestling, is from a business perspective. And so so Jason sent me this note, and I didn't take offense to it in any way. I think it's a really good question, and I wanted to answer it as I thought about it, because the way that I do this is I cover this stuff like I would cover real sports. And so I'll read it to you. It says, "This isn't a takedown or whatever by any means, but I'm curious about you having an opinion about indie wrestling when you admittedly don't keep up with much more of it than the big two U.S. feds. Aren't you embarrassed?" A little stiff there, Jason. I'm just kidding. "Aren't you embarrassed not knowing about Mance but still talking about him?" Okay, so I replied to Jason on Twitter, and my replies are public, so you could see what I said. But as I thought about it, I told him, I was like, "Hey, I'm also going to answer this on the podcast, because I think it deserves more than, you know, a couple of hundred characters." And so the way that I look at this is, what is my role with the podcast that I do on F4W, on Fight Game Media? My role is to cover the pro wrestling as it pertains to those shows. We're Live Pal is a little bit more of a, let's talk about storylines, and but we're also talking about business. Andrew Zarian is really connected, you know, when it comes to sales and stuff and partnerships in wrestling. Like he's connected and gets information, and we talk about that kind of stuff. But also we talk about, you know, whether or not we're happy with certain storylines, or, you know, what Triple H is going to do with creative. That stuff is really fun. The show that I do with you here, we review one show, and we review it maybe more in depth than I've heard from other shows. Now, I haven't heard every show, but I think we cover it, you know, pretty tightly, and we cover it, you know, sort of like in this under a microscope kind of way.
Yeah.
And then we talk about the news from that perspective. And then the show that I do with Dave is literally just all about business, right? Like, it's all about the news and the business of pro wrestling. If I was doing a podcast on independent wrestling, then it would be my job to know everybody in that world. The way that I kind of compare it to is, I'm very close to my sports teams. I watch the Giants. I follow the Giants. I do a podcast about the Giants. And I'm really closely tied to that team. Like, I, as a fan, I follow it just as closely as I would if, you know, if I was covering the team, let's say. Now, I don't have the access, obviously, that these beat reporters do. But so my favorite beat reporter for the San Francisco Giants' name is Andrew Baggerly. Great writer. He was even on Jeopardy, like, smart guy. And he covers that team on a day-to-day basis. I know another guy who I subscribe to his Substack. His name is Roger Munter. I've had him on my podcast, and I pay to learn about the Giants minor leagues because that is what he covers. Now, I wouldn't expect Andrew Baggerly to cover the Giants single A minor league system. I'm sure he has some knowledge about it, but that is not his beat. His beat is the big club and Major League Baseball. Roger has created his own beat of minor league baseball. And similarly, I'm sure Roger watches the big team a decent amount of time, but I'm not going to then expect Roger to have this great analysis on why the Giants bullpen gave up so many runs today, right? So there's a separation of it. And I am, as someone who's not, who's beat, you know, even though this is mostly for fun, is not to cover independent wrestling, I'm not going to punish myself for not having watched Mance Warner's greatest hits, right? He's just not on my radar for the things that I cover. Now, if AEW signs him, then it's sort of my role to go, okay, now I need to kind of find out all that I need to know about Mance Warner. It's just sort of similar to Nick Gage. And he was such an interesting personality to me, but I also talked to people who are near, he's near and dear to their heart. So I learned so much more about him than just what I was able to see when, you know, watching wrestling shows. So that's kind of how it works, in that, you know, if he comes to AEW and our focus is AEW Dynamite, then yeah, I'm going to learn a lot more about him. Like I said with Andrew, I know who he is. I've seen his name. I know MLW had promoted him for a while, and I know, you know, he's kind of in this lane of this hardcore style. And I heard a lot about him this weekend because everybody seemed to have an opinion. Mm-hmm. And basically what I said is that I'm just happy the guy's getting a shot. I don't really have any analysis to give you about whether or not he's going to make it, whether or not he's a great wrestler, whether or not he's a good character. That wasn't my role for what I do. But again, if he makes it to AEW, then it is my role to sort of read up on him and go watch him and make sure that I really understand who he is, especially if he becomes a star there. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't even know if he, you know, is going to be in AEW, but that's sort of how I wanted to. I'm thankful that Jason sent me the question, because it made me really think about how we do this and mm-hmm. how to sort of compare it to real sports and the way that they do it.
Yeah, definitely. And he answered that correctly. I think, you know, it's hard to follow everyone, you know, and your opinion on it on Live Pal was exactly the opinion of someone that, you know, you're talking about his opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. Like, this is, that's, he had one of the biggest opportunities that people just dream about. Right. Like, there's a million of the guys dream about that opportunity. Now, did he hit a home run? Yeah. You know, we'll find out if he ever gets Tony Khan signs him. But, you know, I haven't seen anything yet. So I personally didn't think he hit a home run. I actually thought he was exposed a little bit on national television, and just some of the work was, I've seen him in MLW, and maybe it's just in that setting, because a lot of guys in MLW are just kind of rough and raw because they're, you know, they're young and coming up and stuff as well. But like in this setting, it was glaring, you know, that mm-hmm. he has a long way to go, and, you know, some smaller details. I liked him in MLW. I liked his character. I didn't personally like just throwing him out there without any kind of real proper build, you know, not, you know, at least have him on television for a while and they can do something, but that's just me. But I mean, I know him, I've seen him many times. So, yeah. And I don't watch his deathmatch stuff, so I can't comment on the deathmatch stuff. It's just not my deal, you know?
Yeah.
But I've seen him in regular matches on an independent level, and he's fine on the independent level, but like I said, when I saw him on Rampage this past Friday, I was like, okay, yeah, he's exposed. Kind of reminds me of like how Joey Janela was exposed, mm-hmm. you know, in AEW on national television. You can tell this guy has, you know, he's best for the GCWs of the world kind of stuff. So
Janela might get mad at us, by the way, if someone sends him this.
Oh, it's all right. He can change his tampon. He'll be fine.
You know, the other reason why this question is actually pretty interesting is I think independent wrestling is canon in AEW, right? Like, I think that's how Tony Khan sees it, because how else would he not do the things that you just said mm-hmm. about debuting him and having him do matches and then build him up for Mox? Like, to Tony Khan, he's like, well, majority of our audience, or maybe not majority, but a good chunk of our hardcore audience, they know who he is, so we don't have to create a character for him or let him do, you know, build up to the, like, they know. And I think that's a lot of the hardcore fans do feel that way. And so when I go, gosh, I wish I would have, you know, I wish we could have seen more about X, Y, and Z, they're like, well, I just saw him at my independent last weekend, so I know who this guy is. And I think that's how they see it. So, you know, there is something to that. I think AEW does think that independent wrestling is canon for them. And we probably should know those guys. So, all right, let's talk about Dynamite. Quake by the Lake show started. immediately with the coffin match, and I don't know how much do you think this match had more blood or the main event had more blood?
The main event did
because both guys bled.
Yeah, Jericho, God, he really dug himself deep in that cut. You know, after hitting the exposed turnbuckle.
Yeah.
From after seeing what they did in the main event, blood was kind of unnecessary here.
Mm-hmm.
There's no need for Brody King to bleed in this one. They could just done the plunder, and it would have been fine. So, but I'm not a big fan of that. If you're gonna do blood, I'd rather you have it. You know, save it for the main event. You know, that's what I would have done.
So Darby jumps Brody right as Brody's going through the whole long intro, and
I love that
walk down, and Darby's just right on top of him once the lights come back on. And so, you know, back to the blood thing for a second here. I wonder if like when Tony Khan or when the producers are putting together these matches, the agents, I wonder if they look at this as we need blood here because it makes sense because this is a blood feud. Like this guy jumped Darby at the mall or whatever. But I wonder if they think the blood is supposed to be a shocking thing by now because it's happened. It happens on almost every show now.
Yeah, it's overused.
Like the shock factor of blood is not there anymore. Like the time that it was. The biggest shock factor for blood was in the women's match, right? Because we don't see that.
Yeah, it peaked at that, yeah.
And now I just feel sort of numb to it as a viewer, and I'm not sure that's the best thing, is that I just go, oh, there's blood again. Like, Moxley just does it. Like, that's just his thing now. But I do wonder if there is a strategy around this, because I don't think it really works to what they could get out of it, you know, based on what, because these guys are, you know, especially that main event, it was perfect for it, but then we'd already seen it.
Yep. Yeah. It's like, I'm sure there's someone out there like, well, John and Starrcade 85, like almost every match were bleeding. And that's true. There's a lot of blood in Starrcade 85. But that's Starrcade 85, right? That's a big, big show. Weeks leading up,
and they probably weren't bleeding on TV.
They're not bleeding on TV. There's definitely some blood on the house shows, but that's not televised. That's only the people that are there see it. So yeah, so like if you see it, like we see it every week now. We see a table spot every week now. I was just joking on Twitter this past week, and I put like a little picture of the kids playing the WF, you know, ring game, right? Or like the, you know, because it's like. It felt like this is like kids booking right now. Like it's just, what was it, last week there was a dumpster match. Rampage had a street fight tag team match.
Mm-hmm.
This show had the coffin match, a tornado tag team match.
Mm-hmm.
And if you throw in with, you know, Mox and Jericho bleeding all over the place, there's that too. So it's just overuse of the gimmicks, overuse in the blood. Yeah, I want to see Tony just kind of scale back. I know, like, you know, the key demo that he really well in, right? That's obviously. But, like, I know if he just wants – I know he's – there's still that overall view where he wants to get past a million. I think he thinks this is it. But I just think it's just – I don't know. I don't think it's working.
Number
it's not working because it hasn't got there. So
number will be interesting for this one because they put a lot of effort into promoting this show.
Yeah.
I think next week's
going to be good. Next week will be good because I think people, you know, maybe they didn't see this show. If they skipped this show, they heard about Punk coming back and Punk's back.
Yeah.
I think Rampage is definitely going to get a big boost. Now, how big of that boost is going to be? Like they did 375,000 the first 2 weeks ago. They did what? Four something. This show, little bump, not major.
Well, the booking of that show, someone sent me the spoilers for it. And the spoilers, as they read, I don't imagine, unless Danielson...
No. I'm talking about last week's was like 4-something. So, oh, you're saying that, yeah.
For this upcoming Friday, I mean, it's not built in a way to take advantage of the Punk stuff.
No.
It doesn't look like.
Yeah, the card is just not uninteresting, right? So unless there's some kind of like, hey, I want to see what they're gonna do on Rampage, if CM Punk's gonna show up there, there might be that curiosity. So my guess will be up to like 500 something overall viewers is my prediction on that.
Okay, so lots of stuff happened in this match. Darby gets thrown into the railing, then he gets thrown over the railing.
That was crazy, dude. What if you hit some kid or anyone?
Yeah, hopefully they told people like get out of the way.
Maybe he was aiming after Kip Sabian, who's out there with his box on his head, which they exposed that last. I mean, we talked about this last week. They exposed during that little clip of Pac defending that one title. You know, I think OTT Wrestling or something like that. And they expose that, oh, this guy in this box has been Kip Sabian.
I don't remember them exposing it, but I just...
Yeah, no, they said it was him following him. He's been following Pac.
Oh, so they already said it was him.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I thought everyone knew anyways, but...
Yeah, everyone knew, but this is like, it was just kind of weird how they did it like that.
Brody misses a splash from the apron to the floor through a table. Lights go out for a very long time, so I don't know if Malakai Black just took forever to get into a spot. Lights go out forever. Buddy and Malakai are out there. Darby runs in the ropes. Julia grabs his leg. I think she was supposed to be a little bit more hidden than she was.
I mean, what does it matter? Like, why is she ducked down? Because
they
clearly were allowed to interfere in this coffin match. I think
she wanted it to be a surprise, like if it was a dude and instead it was her, I think. But ultimately it didn't matter.
I think the timing looked off on it, but it's just kind of funny, almost like this is like a takeoff of Undertaker, Yoko, Royal Rumble 94. But the guy they're all triple teaming and double whatever is a guy that's 130 pounds compared to the Undertaker, who's 6'9" and, you know, 285 plus or even 300 plus. So
Brody does this sick cannonball through the table in the corner. They go to the coffin and they're about to open the coffin because you got to shove the guy in the coffin. And Sting is just laying in there. He's like, I thought he maybe had some snacks or something in there. He's like, he's chilling.
Just checking out his Twitter feed. I don't know. Checking out.
So I was like, how fun would it have been if they open up the coffin and Sting is in there and he sits up like the Undertaker? I thought that would have been hilarious if he did that.
Well, that's what I don't understand. So this is where the logic just doesn't make sense. So Darby, we got to think that Darby and Sting got together before this match and Darby's like, listen, or Sting may have told them, listen, there's a good chance that the House of Black's probably going to interfere, but we're going to be ready for him. I'm going to be in the coffin. I'm going to be waiting there. They're going to come out, and I'm not going to pop out until they actually kick your ass really bad. And then we are almost dead. And then because I can't get out unless someone actually opens the damn thing for me. So once they open it, because they're going to try to put you in it, then I pop up. Then I'm saved the day. Right?
Okay, one other logic thing that hurts this, though, because of the characters involved and because of the AEW style of just being fun and crazy and rebellious. The original idea for the coffin is that you put the guy in the coffin, you nail the coffin shut.
Mm-hmm.
People are really scared because they don't know if they can breathe in there, and it's sort of
Malo, Yoko, they all were scared of it.
So scared. And also, it is a metaphor for dying, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you get stuck in the coffin, then you're going to, that means dying. And so that's what I meant when I was like, yeah, Sting probably had some snacks. He was chilling. And then, I don't know, I don't know if it was Buddy Matthews or Malakai Black, but he kind of, he takes a little while to stand up. There was no rush to stand up. And so if you wanted to attack Sting at that moment, you very much could have.
Yeah.
But I think the surprise of Sting being in there was supposed to like freak out, whether it was Buddy. I think it was Buddy.
Yeah,
but
Buddy.
We didn't see a face, so I couldn't tell. Maybe he did give the freaked out face, but all we saw was his back. And he didn't do anything jarring, like, oh my God. He just stood there and he was like frozen.
Well, he's watched a lot of horror movies. He's not scared of this. But he should have just attacked him.
And so Sting is trying to get out of this coffin, and it's not easy for him to get out. And so then time stood still a little bit, but I think people were so fired up just to see Sting in there that they thought it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Sting's still cool. So Sting is in the ring, and he throws the bat at Malakai Black.
Uh-huh.
And Malakai Black is like, wait, nah. Is this a trick? Because if this is a trick, and I'm going to swing this bat, and you're going to do something else, then nope, I'm throwing his bat down. And he just leaves. And so as we get to the finish, Darby has a chain, and he hangs Brody, Ricky the Dragon, Jake the Snake style with this chain, and he goes out. Brody goes out, and as Brody goes out, Darby lets him go. The coffin is open. Brody falls from where he's being hanged and falls right in the coffin, and the coffin door slams on top of him. So it was great timing, great whatever to make that work the way that did. And Darby wins match.
Yeah, I thought since the finish was kind of poorly produced, with, you know, you had Malakai, he took the bat and put it down and walked off and smiled. Then, like, Sting followed him. Then they got to the ramp and had a staring contest on top of the ramp. And the camera quickly focused on that quickly. But then all of a sudden, Darby and Brody King are already up on their feet. So the camera's like, oh, shit, where I need to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know who was charged with producing this match, but they really didn't go over maybe where the camera's going to be, how long the camera's going to be here on this. It just looked very, very, very weird. And then I didn't like that when Darby got the chain around his fist, he starts throwing that hand backwards, right hand backwards, to hit Brody in the face. And it just looks like just bad. Instead of like turning around, maybe Brody ducks, throws something, but Darby actually ducks and gives him like some really good looking punches. And then Brody could take a little spill, you know, into the coffin. And then it's funny. The best part is like Jim Ross he was awesome. This great job by Jim Ross this week. He was cracking me up. Cause right when Brody King does his little bloop, bloop, like, you know, forward roll into the coffin, it was so hokey looking the way he did it that Jim Ross is like, hole in one and laughing. And then on the commercial break, Taz goes, that's like a 3-pointer. And he starts laughing. Like, these guys are just laughing. And it's supposed to be like this violent thing they saw, because it was just so hokey looking the way he did it. So I don't know. I loved it right in the beginning. I loved it. Boom. When Darby came out of the darkness and attacked, I thought it was great. And it just kind of went downhill from there for me.
I mean, it's a coffin match. It's probably the best coffin match that has ever been, just because there was actual action in it. Well, actually, you know what? I take that back. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker was a good match.
Royal Rumble, yeah. 98 was good, yeah.
Yeah. But most of the times, these matches are really bad. So this is going to be better than most of them, even if there are some logic issues with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Back-to-back promos, Mox and Jericho. Mox is saying his interim belt is about pain and how much you can endure. If Jericho's fighting spirit doesn't break, his body will, which is actually what happened in that match. Jericho interview coming out of the break says after 2.5 years, he gets his belt back. He's going to stretch the shit out of Moxley. He did put on some funky leg submission that I don't even think looked like he was like
a lucha submission.
Yeah, whatever that was. Yeah. All right. They talked about this trios tournament that we were wondering what's going to happen. So it's an 8-team tournament. On the left side of the bracket, you have the Death Triangle against Will Ospreay in the Aussie Open. And then you have Andrade and Dragon Lee and Roosh versus the Young Bucks and whoever the Young Bucks are going to get. We'll talk about one person who was eliminated from that story in a second,
mm-hmm.
in a sort of poorly acted segment. and on the other side, the House of Black against the Dark Order, and then the Truth Busters of all teams.
Of all teams there.
This specific match might be the AEW Dark match of the Trios Tournament. Truth Busters and the Best Friends, really? We're going to put this thing on TV?
Yeah, it's on Rampage. It's Friday, right?
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't heard of Slim J in for God knows how long. I didn't know if he was still wrestling. But I know Tony Khan's a big ROH guy. That's where he remembers him from ROH. I don't think he even did anything in ROH of importance, but he liked good old Slim J. And then Daivari, he's a good, decent worker.
He cut a promo on this show. I guess he's a rich guy.
Yeah. He was a rich guy in WWE as well, but he's,
All right, so we got Andrade and Rush versus the Lucha Brothers. And the best thing about this match was that it was a tornado tag match. The worst thing about this match
was it sort of
resembled a normal match that they would have done with normal tag rules.
Yeah. This is like just any standard Lucha Libre tag team match. This is what you get here.
Okay, but because of the rule set, because the rules in this match is that you don't need to tag in and tag out. You can just do great moves. I was happy with this match because these guys... Yeah, I actually liked the match because the logic and the reason to not like the match is because they make the referees look bad and they do stuff. But with the match being a tornado tag, that's not there. By the rules of this match, they could do all this great stuff. And they hit all of this great stuff. There was great dives. There was a double dives over the top from both teams. Phoenix was able to do all of his athletic stuff where he's so smooth with it. And then there's a Canadian destroyer on the side of the apron. And then they got a little wacky near the finish with tying up Penta's mask to the middle rope. And then he's got to save his partner and get unmasked himself. But then Rush and Andrade beat Phoenix, and Hammerlock DDT wins the match, and Andrade and Rush beat the Lucha Bros.
Yeah, Rey Fénix and Penta, they look good. They look good. It's like a nice plate of food you get. You're like, damn, this just looks good. I can't wait to dive in. You're hungry. You're like, oh man, this looks good. It's making you hungry because it looks so good. But when you eat it, it's like oversalted or maybe undercooked. That's what I got in this match. Like, they do flashy stuff and they have good looks, you know, the cool mask and everything. But Pentagon Jr., what the hell they're calling him now these days, he has to be one of the worst wrestlers ever. Like, he is so bad. Like, the match starts and there's like a double hockey fight, right, with the teams. Andrade punches him. Pentagon goes down the corner. Andrade's doing like the look at the crowd, trying to get some heat there, get a reaction from them. And Pentagon, with his both hands, are waving him, come on, more. Like, he's just openly like, oh, come on, more. So then, oh my God. And then it just, oh man. And Penta is just like, he's one of the worst. And then like at one point, Rush and Andrade do these really bad looking punches, and Phoenix and Penta just roll out of the ring casually, stand there, while Rush and Andrade hit the opposite rope, come out and do a dive out. So they're waiting, they're watching and waiting for these dive outs. Horrible. At one point, Penta hits a move, goes for the cover on, I believe it was Rush, and Phoenix stopped him. His own partner stopped him from making the cover to win the match, because they had to hit a double team move. And then he covered, and guess what? False finish, two count, kick out. Oh my God, it was just so bad. And and then the whole thing with the mask coming off, and that could have been a bigger deal down the line, but it didn't. And then Jim Ross openly calls it a train wreck. Like, as it's happening, I loved it. He even said, because of the rules, the referee can't make a mistake. So it's like bulletproof for the referees just to stand there. But that was pretty funny. And then he's just over, Jim Ross is over the top. Oh, that was great. That was amazing. So it's just, I thought this was horrible. I thought this is just bad, really bad stuff. And cool athletic stuff, cool moves, but like, man, just poor. And then Penta, he's really bad, man. He is really bad. But people like him for some reason, but does some cool stuff, I guess. It looks cool. Does some cool moves.
You're talking so bad. We're never going to get George Kittle on this show. That's George Kittle's favorite wrestler.
Yeah, well, I don't know what he's saying. He wears those glasses. I don't know. I don't know why he's not seeing this.
All right, so in a segment that I was pretty disappointed in, because I thought it should have been a little bit more meaningful, the Young Bucks barge into the Dark Order and Hangman hanging out. And Matt does all of the talking here. He's, you know, he thanks Paige. He says, word on the street. This was interesting. He says, I think he's talking about Adam Cole and Red Dragon. He says, word on the street is those guys won't be around. Did you hear that line?
Yeah, I didn't understand it because the Tony Khan talent announcer signed for 5 years or
something. Yeah, I think he's...
We're on the street. The guys that kicked our ass are not going to be around.
It was a shot at the internet or whatever. They were trying to be cute, but it didn't make sense. And Matt says his favorite time in wrestling was building AEW, and then it got weird. He apologizes, and I'm like... Thankfully, this fan base knows the stories of behind the scenes, because if you are not an AEW fan, you have no idea what the hell they're apologizing to him for.
Yeah.
You know, that they're friends, and then they chose this is like this. We chose business over friendship, and so kind of a little too much here. And then after all that, because Adam Page is kind of looking at these guys like. Is this an apology? Am I supposed to feel something? And he goes, can you be our tag team partner in the trios tournament, the Hung Bucks? And Paige says he can't. He's going to be in the corner of the Dark Order. He's not even going to be in the tournament because they chose friendship over championships. And I think that's supposed to be the baby face line right there. So, couple things. I thought the dialogue was really bad. Even worse is that they could have done a few more takes. And I know that's not the style. The style is like this one shot, one camera, like behind the scenes kind of style. Had they produced it, had they worked on their dialogue... Had they shot it a little bit differently so that you're actually seeing reactions and some of this stuff could be meaningful, it could have been a halfway decent segment. But man, the way that they did it, I was like, how did this even make TV?
Jeez, that's a lot. How most of the show make TV? Yeah, this is the CW young adult dramedy coming at you now. So we're going to have to get more of that crap. And like Hangman at Page is like, yeah, you know, I'm just gonna stick with these guys, you know, big buddies. Like, he could have said, like, you know, he doesn't want to be involved in the trios tournament because he's gonna be get back in there and try to win the championship again, the singles championship. He doesn't see himself as a tag team guy or something like that anymore. You know, I don't know. Like,
but then that distances him from the Dark Order, and that's clearly not what they wanted. They wanted,
but he can be supportive of them.
Yeah, like, but I mean, it sounds like he's gonna be. On their team. No, I mean, I think...
He says he's going to be at ringside supporting them.
Yeah, but if the finals of this match, of this tournament, are the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega against the Dark Order...
Oh, God.
Paige has got to be in that match.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they take out the Dark Order.
Someone gets hurt.
Someone gets hurt and he has to fill in. Yeah, it's probably going to be him and Silver and Reynolds, probably, I'm guessing. So yeah, that could happen too. I guess. I don't know. This stuff like seems like they're kind of moved on from this stuff. You know, like at least as an AEW viewer, like, you know, we want the CM Punk stuff, the Bryan Danielsons, we want the FTRs.
That's actually an interesting comparison because you're right. The Punk, the Danielson, the Moxley, the FTR, that stuff feels a lot like there's more meat on those bones.
Yep.
And this stuff is it just feels like okay, like
we've been there already with this.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I'm not a Young Bucks hater in any way. I actually like them, but yeah, this didn't work. And this makes me a little bit fearful of when you know, whatever storyline we're getting, because obviously Hangman's involved, Omega's involved, and then Adam Cole at some point, and then Red, like, there's going to be a lot of personalities here, and if, unless they have a really good idea to get really organized with this story, I'm a little bit worried.
Yeah, and it feels like back to that, these guys playing this sandbox on the show, these guys playing this sandbox of the show, you know, like when Cody was doing his thing and these guys are doing their thing, it just kind of feels like we're back to that. You know, we're going to have CM Punk, FTR, you know, BCC, those guys doing their thing, and we're going to have this young adult drama going on on the in the middle of the card. So,
All right. In maybe the line of the night, Jungle Boy comes out and he's doing commentary, and it's a Luchasaurus match, and he's like, "Hey guys, yeah, glad to be here. Not gonna be here that long though." And I was like, "Yes, that's telling us that this match is gonna be short."
Yeah.
Quick win for Luchasaurus against Anthony Henry. Christian's on the camera in the back. He's talking nonsense. Jungle Boy. Now this was funny because Jungle Boy's like, "Okay, I think I know where he is." And he's going to race to the back to attack Christian. But first, he's got to stop and stare at the big screen as if he's like, wait.
He's confirming.
Yeah, what room is he in? I got to be sure. Like, and then he bolts out. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
And he goes to attack him. You know, unfortunately for Jungle Boy, he's not this giant human like Luchasaurus. So when he jumps and tries to get at Christian, all five of the staff of the security can actually stop him because he jumps and they just grab him. Mm-hmm. And then Luchasaurus comes and he's got his back, and Christian gets out of Dodge. Jungle Boy puts one of these staff guys in a guillotine, and then Luchasaurus headbutts Pat Buck, and Jungle Boy's like, you're going to have Luchasaurus, the dinosaur, check on these guys who you guys just beat up.
Yeah, that was
that's
weird.
The guy. So, and then he went to chase Christian, and then we don't know if he caught him because that was it.
Yeah. And then once again, Luchasaurus did not touch Christian.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I feel like after I think he does turn on Jungle Boy. I don't think it's gonna be a one stupid plot hole,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think that it's possible that they kind of changed the direction of the storyline. In mid storyline, it's quite possible that they're like, "Oh, we did this too early. Let's go back and we can still do it." I don't know. It's what it feels like.
We'll see.
All right, there's a Miro promo. I think a lot of people are confused about this promo.
Yeah, I'm still confused about it. I was hoping you're going to tell me. I put Garrett. I put that on my note.
So Julia Hart tells Miro that he's just got to embrace the gift, like she did, and you just embrace it. And she touches him, and Miro's like, "There's only one woman who can touch the Redeemer, that's not you." And then he says, he's going to use their gift and then beat them with it. So some people thought he's joining them, but I think he's not. Absolutely not joining them.
No.
He just said it in a way that maybe confused some folks. So
yeah, I don't know if it's like if they're going to do one of those deals where he comes out. They think he's with them, and he just swerves and turns on them because we haven't ever seen that before. And then he joins up with Sting and Darby, and that'll be the match at All Out, six-man tag match, which will be another six-man tag because then they'll have another six-man tag with the – unless there's a girl and Lana is wrestling. It's an eight-man or eight-person.
Well, we did have the they told us for Rampage, right, Sammy and Ty – They're the champions. So there's like a AAA intergender tag team champion. So there may be a new belt to go after.
Don't tell me they acknowledged that belt, did they?
Yeah.
Oh my God. At least Dante Martin's okay. He's going to be wrestling. That's a good sign.
Yeah.
But man, if that's the case, an 8-person tag, would you really want to put Lana and Julia Hart on a pay-per-view?
No.
Ooh, if that is, you're going to have to pick and choose certain spots.
Maybe they recruit Paige.
Van Zant?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's she up to?
I think she got another bare knuckles fight coming up.
What's up with Lambert?
Who knows?
Okay.
Maybe, I don't know. That's what we were wondering.
What happened the follow-up for this week? What happened last week when Stokey Hathaway, you know, signed
chasing some new guys.
Yeah.
All right. Mark Henry. It's great to see Mark Henry. I saw a video of his son doing like a 600-pound squat. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Mark Henry was with Will Hobbs. They barely get two words in, and QT and the Factory come out, and they're like they're trying to recruit Will.
It should be called the Channel Changers.
Oh, man. Will tells them, he's like, don't let your problem become my problem. I didn't really get that line, but I think it's like, you better take care of business or then you become my problem, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyways, so that
leads... So that's what I was like, that's what I was wondering was going to happen. Like, are they going to start all teaming up on Starks and then here comes Will Hobbs to save him?
Yeah.
I hope not. You know, then he's just going to beat him up after he saves him.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a little confusing.
I still think we should have, you know, last week Hobbs should have killed whoever, I forget who he beat, but killed that person. And then this week he kills that person again. You know, get some momentum behind this guy.
No, instead he killed the TV.
Yeah, he destroyed the monitor.
Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh came out. They actually got an introduction. So I was like, is there a match? Nope. They just did an interview talking about the Battle of the Belts. And so Wardlow comes out, and he did exactly what we said last week he has to do, which is he starts taking the shirt off before he gets into the ring, and it's almost unbuttoned by the time he gets in it. And he's like, hey, you want another shot at the title? You got it. But tonight, I'm whipping all three of you. Goes down to the ring. And then a song comes on. I was like, oh, FTR.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're supposed to remember that FTR and Wardlow were once in a stable together, the Pinnacle.
Yeah.
And a lot of people going like, where's MJF? If you're going to bring back the Pinnacle, shouldn't Wardlow be the guy to lead the Pinnacle since he beat MJF?
Well, you remember when they broke up the Pinnacle and all that? Remember during one of the promos, I think one of the six-man tags or something leading up to one of those matches, MJF and FTR versus Punk and Sting and Darby, I think it was?
Mm.
In a promo, FTR, they mentioned, yeah, you have issues with Wardlow, but
right,
he's cool
right.
with us.
Yeah.
You know,
I remember that.
I didn't mind this at all. I wasn't confused at it.
I liked it, but I saw people on the internet going like, well, where's Max? If we're going to bring back the Pinnacle, shouldn't Max be here? I'm like, no, Max got beat. Like,
yeah.
Wardlow should be the leader of the Pinnacle.
Yeah, and Max should not be in the Pinnacle. He should do something else or construct a new Pinnacle. You know,
Exactly.
I don't want to see that. I would like to have him maybe have someone with them, but you know, I wouldn't have them do a whole group again, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So then,
what was happening? What did you okay? Oh, are you still in this segment? I'm sorry,
No, so Sanjay Dutt is looking underneath the ring and he's looking, and it stalls the thing out because now Wardlow and FTR are in the ring standing tough, and he's like looking, and he goes to the other side, and
nothing.
Then Lethal just kind of jumps in the ring and Wardlow catches him, and then he gets the big rig. But yeah, I have no idea what Sanjay Dutt was doing.
I wonder what they're gonna get to show them or do something or something that's gonna be something that's gonna hold them back. I don't know. And then Lethal just kind of, I don't know if he just improvised that. Just he obviously did because Satnam didn't go in there do anything, right?
Yeah.
I wonder what that was. It was like time's too stale. I mean, Sanjay's looking. He looks at MJF and goes, what the hell? Like, he's all upset. And I'm like, isn't he one of the people that are the liaison supposed to be part of the, you know,
all the people to not have something go wrong. Yeah.
I think it has something to do with the layout of the show or part of the, you know, production. So how does he not know? I guess whoever they told to do, put whatever they need to put it on the wrong side.
Yeah. Okay. So, Jericho Appreciation Society with Tony in the back. They're going to have a party after Jericho wins. Tony Schiavone is not invited to this party. And then Anna Jay just starts yelling at someone, and you don't think that Jericho's going to win? All right, I'm going to choke you out. And she goes crazy and chokes out another person.
Yeah, who don't know who that was, but
it makes me laugh because
can't be.
They're leaning into that original promo that she did that everyone was like, God, this is the worst. And I'm happy that they did, because it does give her a little bit more of a personality than she had before. So I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Okay, Aaron Solo versus Ricky Starks. That nice little video package showed them as a tag team when they were younger.
We had to tell this story.
Like, well, I know. I mean, it's the stuff
like,
that we
care for Aaron Solo. I don't think anyone cares for Aaron Solo. Man.
Well, it's the stuff that we say that they should do more of when it comes to this history of stuff that we're supposed to know.
It would be fine if Aaron Solo was somebody, but he's really nobody here. And so why? Why waste our television time on this, right? Like, they were partners on some indie way back when. Like, who cares? Just, you know, I'm sorry, Solo, he just doesn't – he's a technically fine, but he just has no charisma. It's just, you know, so just go out there, Ricky wins, and – but then what happened after that was just wacky.
Yeah. So quick win by Stark, spear, and then – Komuroto, he's wearing a velour jogging suit.
Yeah, he changed his look and gimmick, right?
Yeah, and he's wearing a hat. And so after Starks wins, he gets really pissed. He takes off the jacket, and he runs into the ring, grabs a chair, throws maybe the single worst chair shot I've ever seen. And this may be a biased opinion because we're watching 98 Raw, and all these dudes are just hitting each other in the face with chairs. And
well,
I mean,
he swung it to obviously miss.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's like throwing the rainbow clothesline. Like, they go, oh, put my hand way high. So you don't talk that far.
And then he gets spine bustered for it. Now, this is interesting. I want to get your thoughts on this, because obviously Ricky is still outnumbered because there's so many of these of these guys. And so then QT finally comes in, and Ricky had gone through, you know, Solo, and he'd gone through Komuroto. And now QT comes in. Now Ricky jets for the audience crowd, and he gets out of Dodge. He's also high-fiving fans and stuff. So it looked fun, but I was just wondering what you thought about the psychology of him bailing out once QT came after him.
I don't mind him bailing out because there's a bunch of guys going after him. Like, you know, I wouldn't mind him, you know, he got two of them, but then here come the other guys. He can kind of slip underneath, you know. I don't think it was executed properly. Well, I might have just missed it, but correct me if I'm wrong. The cut to Will Hobbs breaking the television.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they established that he's actually watching this match in the back.
No, they didn't.
So all of a sudden there's like this cut. Like, what's the cut? Like, how does that director know? Like, oh, shoot, Will Hobbs is going to break a camera. He's upset. We got to talk. Like, so I thought they should have been like, as Starks comes out, instead of doing the stupid, you know, history of this, you know, for Aaron Solo and Ricky Starks, they could have showed like, oh, look, Powerhouse Hobbs, he's really focused on this match. He's, you know, very interested in this match or something like that. And then you can go back to him being upset. So,
yeah,
I saw QT, people think it's probably going to be a mess up, but it's not. Like, he was just being goofy, like, trying, like, having a hard time getting on the guardrail. You see that?
Yeah.
But that's their deal. They're the goofballs.
Yeah. All right. Billy Gunn chewing out his sons by ruining the match that he made famous, the dumpster match.
The one match he made famous, he said. The only match in his whole career that he made famous was the dumpster match.
Stoke Dog Hathaway comes out, and he calls him Grandpa Ass. Mm-hmm. He's about to give his card to the boys, and Billy stops him. And so Stoke's like, okay, I'm good. But Billy has a match for them that they're, you know, it's kind of like a makeup match for him. And all of a sudden you see Danhausen come out. And Danhausen said that it's going to be him and the big bearded fellow on Friday at
Rampage.
And
I didn't know who the fuck he was talking about.
I didn't
until
either.
Until I saw the graphic.
Yeah, it was Redbeard.
Yeah, Rowan from the old Wyatt family. Should we have the Acclaim promo here on this show after they won the match last week?
Yeah, they're nowhere to be found.
No.
Well, I guess the curiosity was whether the Gunn sons were hurt or not, because they were really in that dumpster.
Yeah.
And, but you couldn't tell if they were hurt at all. Like, but they were just normal.
Pushing the gun club, or are we pushing the acclaim? If we're pushing the acclaim, they should have had a promo talking about their big win. They got whatever, you know, revenge on the ass boys, and now they're, you know, gunning for the tag team titles or gunning for someone. Like, let's give them, you show highlights, the best highlights of that match, and show that craziness. Like, they didn't even show that spot again.
But this is how Tony books the next shows, though, right? Like, the next show's matches are all built in these backstage things. So the acclaimed aren't wrestling on Rampage, so thus they didn't have anything to do.
They should be wrestling on Rampage. It shouldn't be Danhausen versus Neckbeard or whatever else. What's his name? I don't know his name.
Redbeard fellow.
Sorry, excuse me. Sorry, I think Neckbeard's like a negative thing, but it should be the claim that they're not hurt. I mean, maybe they might be. I mean, everyone's getting hurt. Chris Dantlin, we found out, was hurt now for some, you know, my goodness. You know, like, they should be able to cut a promo, and they should have another match. This on Rampage against, I don't know, some goofy team that they can beat, right? Who's their, you know, who, I don't even know who all their tag teams are, but, you know, someone on the lower end heel side that they can get in to get a nice little win and keep momentum going for them. Like,
yeah,
they don't, you can't keep momentum going if they don't, if they win a big match or a specialty match, and then next week they're not even on television at all.
Yeah.
At least a damn music video. They could have cut a great music video of them rapping about their victory.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe instead of, they don't have to wrestle on Rampage, but just do this damn promo, right? Do this damn promo and then let someone else wrestle, you know, in a match.
There's a segment in a bit that we're going to get to that they could have completely cut for something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Best friends about to be interviewed by Tony. They don't get one word in before they get the truth busters running.
It was a gag. It's like, oh, you guys, you have something to say. And he started doing the patty cake game.
Yeah, yeah.
Stupid.
So this is back-to-back angles where someone is trying to recruit another person to their team. Daivari's like trying to get Orange Cassidy, get his attention. Cassidy's like, whatever it is, the answer is no. And Daivari says he'll see what happens when someone says no to Daivari. So they have the match for Rampage, and then they are also in the side of the bracket for the Trios tournament. So they're kind of setting up two different things at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, them signing Parker, I can see Tony's like, okay, everyone was an uproar that WWE changed his look, right? People kept calling him the future Brock Lesnar, all this
stuff,
right?
Somebody today in our Facebook group called him Big Lots Brock Lesnar.
Big
Lots. I thought that was funny.
That was pretty good. You know, like, I'm guessing Tony Khan sees that in him, right? Or wants that out of him. But instead of, like, throwing him out on TV and putting him in with these goofballs, just sign him and have him go and do indies, but pick and choose his, you know, opponents. Like, you know, if he's, you know, working out a deal with some indie promotion to book, I say Defy, right? Like, oh, you know, can you use Parker and put him on your show? But I need him to work with a veteran that's going to go and teach him. And he can kind of work a couple, not the same veteran, which would be fine. But I would kind of like mix like a crew of like five veterans that he can work with on various different indies. And then when you feel like he's ready, then you can bring him up and give him a push. And that should be for like a year or longer, right? Like, I know he had training in NXT, but I think he, you know, unfortunately, he didn't get a chance to do I don't think he did a lot of coconut loops and all that kind of stuff, right? Like, I think that was the pandemic and they weren't doing that. So give him some ring experience, keep him off TV. Don't rush him out there just to do this, you know, trios thing. Put some another goofball with these guys. And then, because Brock Lesnar debuted on WWE television, you know, he wasn't hanging out with job guys, right? Like, he was fucking up the Hardy Boys, destroying them. So I just think I feel like Tony sees that potential in him, but you're not going to get there the way you're booking him. So,
all right. So the next segment is, long-ish match with Madison Rayne and Jake Cargill.
Coach Madison Rayne.
So I think the thing that stood out the most is Jade had to sell some really bad forearms and strikes from Madison Rayne. And, you know, if they were snug and they had some fire and they had some heat behind them, I'm fine with Jade selling. But, man, these were really bad-looking strikes here, and Jade had to sell. It looked comical, her trying to sell these shots.
It was more than that. It was just the mistiming and I don't know if you saw. I know you didn't see. You probably fast-forwarded it, but I was on a little bit of a – I didn't have much time to fast-forward, but I was taking my notes. They go to picture-in-picture, and the breaks – the move before the picture-in-picture break spot was the spear, right? Like Cargo. She comes up flexing, right? This is during the – now we're in the commercial break, picture-in-picture. She's flexing. And then the Madison Rayne sells to the apron. Cargo suplexes her back in the ring, and Cargo starts selling like her back is out.
Mm.
And they're both down, and I'm like, is this going to be part of the story? Like she just hurt her back? You know, that going to be – but no, Madison sells up into the corner, and then Jade's up and back on offense. So it was, this was really bad. Madison Rayne, man, I know she took a long time off. I don't know if you probably weren't watching Impact, but she was doing
no,
she was doing the play by play for a very long time with the. I think she's still married, Josh Matthews, right? They're still married. They were doing play by play together for, I think. During the pandemic, for sure. Then she kind of came back, and that's when I kind of stopped falling off with Impact. That's we gotta talk to our guys, Mike Gilbert and JD Olivia of the Brace for Impact podcast. They'll fill us in how her work was in Impact when she came back. But man, did you watch Rampage?
I watched Battle of the Belts, and I watched a couple of things on Rampage, but I don't think I saw the entire show.
I watched Rampage because I covered Battle of the Belts for my Take It Home podcast on the Fight Game Media free feed, and. Yeah. And I was like, well, if I'm going to cover Battle of the Belts, I guess I kind of have to watch Rampage, right? So I watched the whole thing, and Madison Rayne versus Layla Gray was the match that was on there. And it was a Tuesday night at wrestling school practice match. That's how bad it was. It, like, you could just see them just going over stuff slowly. You know, the waist lock go behind. They each did a switch. And it was like so slow. It was almost like, okay, now we're going to switch. And now you're going to switch. And now I'm going to switch again. And it was, you know, you could see the head nods of come at me, like duck. Like you could hear, it was like they're just going over the match that they're probably going to do that Saturday at the local high school, right? And this is on television. I was like, man, this is bad. And they're promoting her as a coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing coach meaning not training. I hope not. Because if she's supposed to be coach for training – man, she couldn't even guide this girl to a decent match on television. And then here comes Jade Cargo, but I think this is poorly booked. Okay, Madison Rayne, you got her. Great. I know she has some name value, but I don't think the AEW crowd or this crowd here really took her as a major star, right? And so I don't think a lot of people even seen her in a very long time. If they only even watch Impact, maybe. So she didn't get that bigger reaction. They're trying to make her up as a big deal. I think it should have been just Cargill, you know, you give Rayne something, but then Cargill should beat her again and beat her quickly in one segment. Mm-hmm. Letting it go so long, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And you're just in the long run, you're not doing anything for Jade. You're making her look bad, right? So Madison Rayne, I say she's gonna be a coach or the liaison to Tony Khan and the women. Like, okay, do this match, get put over Jade Cargill. And that's you're going to be a role, like not a television in-ring performer.
All right. The next segment is the one I was talking about where they could have completely cut because I don't think
this
it did anything
was
for anybody.
Bad, man.
So it sounds like Statlander is hurt and now Tony Storm is the number one contender. So Thunderstorm is being interviewed and Tony's basically saying, you know, I love our team, but my goal is to be the champ. And Thunder Rosa just kind of big times her about the possibility of her title match. She's like, yeah, I'll get back to you. Like, you know, I guess.
Yeah,
I
was good luck next week.
I was like, what's going on here?
It's unfortunate this happened the way it did, but, you know, we're competitors. unfortunate. She's already a contender.
Yeah.
She's been winning matches to be a contender.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, it's not unfortunate. I don't know. Maybe Thunder Rosa's going heel. I don't think so. But, or maybe Toni Storm's probably going heel, I'm guessing. I don't know. It's just weird. I think the, since Thunder Rosa's won it, the title, the AEW women's title has now taken a step below the TBS title, in my opinion. I think at least Jade being undefeated is something, right? And it's going to be, it should be a big deal for whoever beats her. I don't know who that woman will be. Maybe it's going to be Athena. I don't know. We didn't talk about Athena coming, doing a little surprise, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. She's
dressing
she
up as a baddie
at
the end. And that's another thing, like, kind of quickly go back to that, circle back to that Cargill Reign match. Like,
I mean, and it looks like it's gonna, that'll be the all-out match, right? Athena against Jade.
Like, you show Cargill being dominant, beating up someone else again, and then I don't know if you do the surprise thing with Athena, you could do something else, but anyways, you could show Athena now kind of knocking on her ass and kind of be like, oh shit, well, Jade's been destroying people, but now it looks like Athena can probably handle her. Maybe Athena's gonna be the woman that's gonna beat her, you know, kind of. And then she, you know, scoots out and gets out of there. Yeah, this is bad stuff. A lot of bad backstage segments, which is kind of like the weakness of AEW, though. We talk about almost like every week.
Yeah, it's just the way that they set up matches quickly, and it's like, it's just an overkill of the same thing. It's just the same. Like, Tony just stands there, and he's like, 1, 2, 3, go. And then someone comes in.
And Toni Storm wrestling Kylan King.
Yeah.
Which we haven't seen since probably the pandemic shows.
Yeah. Actually, let's get to the whole roster of a whole list of matches here.
Yeah.
So Danielson is going to do an interview on Rampage. Hook is going to be on Rampage. The Gun Club against Beardhausen. Parker Boudreaux against Sonny Kiss. Swerve in Our Glory, and Cassidy against Daivari. It's Sammy and Tay against Dante and Sky Blue. Sammy and Tay are the mixed tag team champions in AAA.
Now, you know what they could have done with the claim instead of doing the Gun promo? Gun, they have a rap video about the dumpster match, and then the second half of that rap video is a rap about going for the championships, beating up Swerve, taking the belts from Swerve and Lee, and then you can advertise on Rampage that Lee and Swerve will respond to the Acclaimed video earlier.
Well, maybe they're going to do a run-in.
Oh, God. Hope not.
All right, so for Dynamite next week, it is the first match of the Trios Tournament, Andrade, Rush, and Dragon Lee against the Young Bucks and their mystery partner. So if it's going to be Omega, he's going to show up on next week's show.
Yeah.
Unless they do it with their cameraman and with the idea that, you know, they then need Omega to win the finals or something, but I'd be bummed out if Andrade, Rush, and Trek and Lee lost to the cameraman Brandon.
Yeah, or they lost losing two, you know, with the handicap match basically.
Yeah. Toni Storm against Kylan King, like you said, and then I'm surprised actually they announced this. Well, it's probably better to announce this. Danielson against Garcia, 2 out of 3 falls. But you're doing an interview with Danielson on Friday. So I thought that'd have been the better way to announce that match. Maybe they should have done an interview with Danielson on tonight's show so they could announce that match. But it just pops up. It's like, oh, Danielson's going to be interviewed on Friday, and he's also going to be wrestling on Wednesday. So
I think they should have held off to announce it on Friday, where Danielson says, you know, you beat me. I wasn't, you know, I'll be honest, I wasn't 100%, but I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to hold that from your victory, but you know, but you also beat because you had interference from Jake Hager or something like that. And then like, it's going to be 2 out of 3 falls. You're claiming you're the best, whatever. I'm going to whip your ass in 2 falls straight. I think you should beat them 2 falls straight.
Yeah. All right. I know we're going a little bit late here because I do have the interview with Scotty that's going to take some time. So I'll try and get through this pretty quickly. Jericho comes out as the Lionheart. He comes out to his Lionheart music as well. He's clean shaven. He's wearing his old tights, and Moxley comes out. A great Jericho Moxley story from Moxley's book is that Jericho's the one who recruited Moxley to AEW. And when Moxley was trying to get back to Jericho after some time, you know, about what this AEW thing is about, Moxley texted the wrong number. And so he thought Jericho was big time in him. But he then looked in his phone and he had another number for Jericho that said New Jericho. And he's like, damn it, I sent it to the wrong one. So whenever I think of them together, I think of that story because it's so funny. It's from his book. Okay, so I want you to explain this to me, because one of the early things in this match is Jericho tears the earring out of Mox's ear. And from what I thought, it looked like the earring just didn't have a backing on it. So he just pulled it out.
He pulled it out, yeah.
So did Mox blade his ear?
It looked like it. Looked like I saw the cut there.
My God.
Yeah, he's nuts.
This guy, he's got...
Because once he ripped it out, there was no... Like, he was holding his ear, there's no blood, right? For a very long time. So then finally, they would cut to Jericho, like twice. They had to do it twice. He's holding the earring to the camera.
Yeah. Because, yeah, then he's just, the left side of his face is just gushing with blood.
Yeah.
So Jericho hits a lion salt, and he smartly did the lion salt very early in this match because it looked great. As he was getting tired, if he pulled this thing out near the end of the match, I don't think it would have looked as great. He also put on the wacky leg submission that I mentioned that I was like, are you trying to cradle him, pin, like what is this thing? And then he puts him in the figure four around the ring post. Mox gets a cross face as a submission of his own. Jericho puts him in the Walls of Jericho, and this is the longest Walls of Jericho maybe ever, because it has to go through the entire picture in picture.
Yeah Maybe we shouldn't have those stupid ass segments and Ricky Starks and Aaron Solo history, so we can do this spot correctly on it's on camera. So
then Jericho takes off two turnbuckle pads, and that is to distract Aubrey so that he can get his weapon, which is Sammy Guevara being in the crowd and throwing Floyd. Sammy Guevara, I'm going to guess he wasn't a great baseball player as a youth in Little League, because he overshot this bat over Jericho's head. So much so that the bat bounces outside of the ring, and Jericho's got to go outside the ring to get the bat to bring it back. So poor Aubrey has got to like pretend that she's still distracted by these turnbuckle pads. And then finally Jericho gets
what
the bat.
What do these do? How do I put them back on? That's what she's looking at, she's doing.
And he blasts Moxley. So now there's still the turnbuckle pad is off one of the corners. So Moxley hits one of the turnbuckles and then eats a Judas effect, which I thought was really good timing. And he kicks out. I think this is the first time anyone's kicked out of the Judas effect. So that was a really cool spot. Moxley gets a rear naked and changes it to a bulldog. He's trying to get Jericho out, but Jericho transitions, escapes, and he puts on the Walls of Jericho, but in the old lion tamer style with the higher on the neck. Mox escapes. He has Jericho in a rear naked choke. Jericho has one arm that is trying to fight it. Mox traps that arm with his legs, and Jericho has to tap out. Mox wins the match. These guys are both beat to hell. Sammy and Jake Hager run down the ring to jump Moxley. Then Claudio and was it Wheeler Yuta who also came out? Wheeler Yuta also came out. Then JAS, so 2.0 comes out, and then more of Moxie's friends, Kingston,
FTR come out,
Santana. No, I don't think they did.
Not Santana.
Ortiz. Yeah. And they come out, and then all of a sudden you hear the music, CM Punk's music, and he races out, and he's running in, and he's throwing right hands, and the ring clears. He's in the ring celebrating his return. Moxley's just sort of seated, exhausted after having this long match. He's just kind of like, I know this dude's behind me, but I'm going to get up in my own time. Finally gets up. They go nose to nose. And then Mox flips him off. And as he's about to leave the ring, he shoulder bumps Punk. And then that show ends. And Punk hops around on one foot to show the crowd that he's good. Mm-hmm. Though, when he was running down to the ring, he did seem to be a little stiff. Like, it didn't look like he was 100% there.
Maybe he's just a little concerned about it. Didn't want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's how the show ended.
Yeah. I thought the match, I liked some of it. I didn't like. I thought the earring thing was cool. I thought different, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought maybe the beginning of the match, 'cause in the beginning of the match, like, Jericho was able to get these submissions on Moxley. He's doing these Lucha submissions and stuff. But what if, like, 'cause Jericho's been saying, I'm gonna stretch him, but he gets in there, like, he can't get. Every time he tries to get something on Mox, Mox quickly reverses it. He's getting frustrated, and he's able to get Mox in a position where he's desperate, and so that's when he rips out the earring, and that's when Mox bleeds, and now, you know, because of the blood and everything, Mox, like, equilibrium's off, and then now Jericho's able to try to get these submission holds on him and get the advantage, because, you know, that's the part, the beginning part I didn't like. And then also the finish. First of all, the air mailing of the bat was hilarious. But also, like, Guevara doesn't understand how to work. Like, oh no, I made a mistake. He's like, oh, like, laughs. Like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, oh well, we messed up, right? It was like, I don't think he expected the camera to be on him, but he should have, you know? He was kind of like laughing about his mistake. And then also, like, the rear naked choke that Mox had. Did you think it was weird that Jericho, the heel, is trying to pump up, like, Bayface pump up out of it, like, shake his hand, like, the fans, like, come on.
He had some babyface moments in this match.
But he's a heel, though.
I know, but when he came out as a Lionheart to that music,
yeah. I know,
he was panned. He was totally
Tom Moxley. He won the Lionheart, the guy that lost in the second round of Chris Benoit, the Super J tournament, and the guy that held the Cruiserweight title for like 2 months in WCW.
He was doing a little pandering to the crowd when he came out.
Yeah, it's cool to, you know, yeah, it's cool, but I would like to see Jericho do this maybe when he's a baby face, you know. Mm-hmm. He could have done something like that, but anyways, whatever.
You know, I mean, you know the reason for this, right? Is because they got a figure. They have a AEW figure with Jericho in the Lionheart gear.
Yeah, it
or actually, no. I think it was the
spoiler.
It's the Corazon de León gear. Is it?
CMLL, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, cool. It's gonna sell anyway. The same people they're gonna buy it anyways, you know. And a kid that knows Chris Jericho from WWE is like, oh damn, I gotta get Chris Jericho, you know. Like, yeah. So.
All right. So yeah, that was a very newsworthy edition of Dynamite. I think it's gonna be pretty well received, at least from the feedback that I've seen. And I really liked a lot of this show. I mean, some of the stuff you could tell based on our review of the stuff that it's just become part of the way that they do things. And, you know, I think it's some of that is trying to get so much stuff into 2 hours, yeah. But that's what we got here until they decide to slow down, but maybe not, because this is just how they do it.
You see the title for next week's show, special show?
Uh-uh.
It's called There Will Be Blood, .. No shit.
they did get a sponsorship.
I know, House of Dragons.
Yeah, House of Dragons, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. But that's their own network too, so this is cross promotion.
Yeah, right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But still, that's the big one for them, right?
If they would advertise special look, maybe they will as we get closer. But they should advertise special clip, extended clip of House of Dragons, Game of Thrones prequel. Yeah,
that'd be cool. All right, thanks for hanging out with us. We're gonna throw it to my interview with Scott Edwards, talking Joshi, talking Stardom, the five-star GP, the New Japan crossover. Throw that right now. All right, welcome to Scott Edwards. Scott E. Wrestling on Twitter. Scott, you are somebody who now in this wrestling fandom business, in this content creation business, in order to do good work, you have to kind of watch a lot of wrestling. And I see the things that you tweet about. And in the back of my mind, I think, how does Scott have enough time to watch the Kurt Angle A&E documentary? Like, and that's no shot at the Kurt Angle documentary. I'm going to eventually get to it, too. I definitely want to see it. But you're watching Stardom in the middle of the night, and then you're following up with New Japan, and then you're keeping up with the current U.S. promotions as much as you can. Like, what is your priority here? You're wearing the Boston Red Sox hat. I don't imagine you're watching too many Red Sox games right now.
My job is watching Red Sox games, actually.
That's right. Like, right.
So my shoot job is actually watching them. So that's funny that you bring that up. So, like, it's so funny. If I'm off nowadays, it's because I've been a Red Sox fan my whole life. If I'm off, I'm not watching the Red Sox, mostly because they're like so, it's been a struggle, you know, to watch them this season, like, or the second half of the season. The first half was pretty fun, but it's so funny that you say that, because it's like, okay, well, that's what I'm doing while I'm actually at work. But yeah, I don't know how I do it all. I'm not gonna lie to you, like, watching that Kurt Angle documentary, that was the first one I saw of this year's biographies, and it was great if anyone hasn't checked it out. But yeah, it's hard. You gotta just pick and choose. I mean, I say pick and choose, and then you name all those things that I'm watching. I'm like, do I really pick and choose? I don't watch anything like full. So like AEW and Stardom are the only two that I'll watch all their stuff. So I'll watch all of their TV. I don't watch Dark or Dark Elevation, I'm sorry, but I will watch all AEW TV, and I will watch all of Stardom shows, mostly because that's kind of like the beat I'm running now in a lot of ways. But that's, and then everything else is just pick and choose. Like, I can't get myself to watch a Chase Owens versus, you know, guy that I can't name off the top of my head match. Sure. Yeah, but I make it work somehow. And, you know, there's times that I have to, you know, cut back a little bit, but it may not sound like that when my Twitter's going off of like, oh, this match was great. Oh, this match was bad. Like, it's give and take. It's give and take. But I try to fit it all in.
All right. I'm going to list all the places where you are creating content, and we'll get that out of the way now. So people who, as they listen to you, they may be able to find you. All the stuff is also on your Twitter, but Ring Post Radio, Last Word on Pro Wrestling, The Ocean Cyclone Show, obviously Fightful and Voices of Wrestling. Again, there is a time commitment to all of these different places, and I'll bring up the podcast that you do for Fight Game Media in a second. But you know, this is all time consuming. This is all, you know, you're doing this sort of for a reason. Does that help when you sort of justify as much as you do watch? Because you're like, oh yeah, I have to write about this. Oh yeah, I'm going to talk about this on this thing. But also at the same time, how do you keep it all organized in that prioritization?
Yeah, it does help if I'm writing about it or talking about it. Like, that's kind of the goal now. It's like, if I'm watching something, I want it to mean something at this point, because I might let it go after a while. Like, I might not watch it if I'm not making it mean something, whether it be via podcast or writing an article. Keeping track of it, the podcasts, they're usually pretty simple. I mean, I record the same time every week about with my co-hosts. And then the Ocean Cyclone Show is monthly. So that keeps it a little bit easier. When it comes to, you know, Fightful and Voices of Wrestling, I mostly do previews and reviews for Stardom shows, but I'll do a feature once in a while when I have time. And Fightful, I've gone all in on that, which has taken a lot more time out of my schedule, but it's everything I love. So I'm not upset with it. You know, it's worth every minute, but it is hard to keep track after a while. You kind of have to go back and forth. You know, I have notes phone, the notes in my app, like I'm writing down what I'm trying to remember to do this week, what I need to get done. So like, for example, I'm going on vacation next week, and I'm like almost dreading it in some ways, because I have so much to do in my head, so I have to get it all done this week. But that's part of it. That's what I signed up for. That's what I want to do it for. So it's part of the game, I guess.
I mean, it's a great thing that you just mentioned, because a couple weeks ago I went on vacation as well, And so this podcast, so this video is on the F4W channel, but this is also being tagged onto the end of the Fight Game podcast with John LaRocca. There was going to be 2 weeks where I missed out on doing the show with John. Mm-hmm. And so I had to pre-record two shows, yeah, both evergreen shows, to kind of fill that. Because, you know, the worst thing is when you kind of get a little bit of rhythm and you're comfortable and your audience is comfortable, to take time off, it feels like, oh no, I'm going to lose that momentum. So keeping that momentum going is probably a little bit more of an anxiety thing for us. I'm sure the people who like to listen will come back, but it's just like, oh, yeah, we're doing so many cool things. I don't want to stop that momentum. So totally get that. Now, the thing that you do with me is the Five-Star Joshi show, which originally, I believe, now remind me, Parker did it and you were the co-host, and then Parker had to step away. His real life job got in the way of it, and then you took it over solo, and you were bringing on guests, and you were really covering the, you know, covering it all. And then Parker's recently come back. He's had some more time. Now he may bounce in and out a little bit, but now you're the host and he's your co-host. So that kind of worked out pretty cool. But, you know, I will say, for people who enjoy Joshi or want to listen or want to learn and get into it, which is, we're going to talk about that in a second. Scott, you know, he has the show that he does on the Patreon, Fight Game, patreon.com/FightGameMedia. It's $5. It's a very cheap Patreon to subscribe to. And then we've recently made a free version of that show, which is only the Stardom conversation. Mm-hmm. So if you want all of the other Joshi promotions that Scott covers, you do go for the Patreon. But this the show that you do is either Saturday or Sunday, depending on what other schedules are. And now that has become, you know, one of the most listened to on the Fight Game Media Network. So that podcast, now talk about just the idea behind it, because for a U.S. audience, I can imagine, I know there are some diehard Joshi fans in the U.S. I know, because I see our Twitter and I see who reacts to the posts when you put the show up. Yeah. But at the same time, I know there's also some bubbling interest of people in the U.S. who want to learn more. Mm-hmm. So how do you put that show together, knowing that the hardcore audience knows everything and they want to hear you talk about it? But also, there's this kind of burgeoning audience who's like, gosh, I've always wanted to give Joshi a try. Maybe this is kind of my gateway to it.
Mm-hmm. You know, for me, I think the most important thing when I'm preparing the show, because oftentimes I do that now, because obviously Parker, like you said, in and out a little bit. It's kind of become my show in a lot of ways. But he's my co-host as long as he's around. But the purpose of any time I'm creating like the docket of making each week's show is, you want to focus on really what everyone wants to hear the most, and that is Stardom. That is why it's the free episode, right? So we give that almost an hour per week at least, because that's what people want to hear. It's just the truth. And, you know, we're in the, and as we're going to talk about a little bit, we're in the Five-Star Grand Prix time, and that is the most important Joshi tournament of the year. So for me, it's like, okay, let's talk about each match. Let's talk about why it was good, why it was bad, the wrestlers that are in there. Because say if you're listening to for the first time and you're hearing about, you know, for example, Koguma, for the, you've probably never heard of her before. You might hear of like, right, like you might hear of like the you know, the ones like Dave's talked about, Tommy and Mayu, right, like you've maybe heard about them, but you go deep into that roster. We want to give care to everyone, because if you're a first time listener, you have no idea who these people are. You may know the basics, but that's why I've crafted it that way. So, and Parker's great because he watches it all at the same time. And obviously with his job coming back, I don't know how much that'll happen, but we're going to do our best. And when I bring guests on, for me, it's finding a different mindset too, especially given the topic. So if I'm bringing someone on for Stardom, I want them to bring a different, you know, attitude to it. If I'm bringing someone on for TJPW, it's because they enjoy the product. I don't want to bring people on that are just gonna, you know, hate something, right?
Right.
You don't want to do that. You, because the point of the podcast is to grow Joshi and make people aware of it. So that's kind of where I'm at in designing that show. It's to almost always be positive. We'll call out bad things because, listen, wrestling can't be perfect, but it is to inform, it is to give our own thoughts and hopefully make people want to watch. Because to me, that's always going to be the most important. That's why I do all this.
Absolutely. You are helping sort of educate around the sport as it grows. And in the U.S., you know, I do think that there's a lot to watch if you are a U.S. wrestling fan. There's a lot to follow. There's a lot to cover. But this, if you are interested in Stardom or other Joshi promotions, like, it does seem like there's this bubbling that is there, and you know, they're Stardom and New Japan are looking to take advantage of some of that. So that's going to be an interesting thing, and I'll ask you about that in a second. But you mentioned the 5-star GP that is going on now. So I think most people know who listen to this, they sort of understand how the G1 works. The G1 is also going on right now. Climax 32, and I'll ask you a couple questions about that in a second. But what? Give us the nuts and bolts of the 5-star GP and how that works in sort of comparison to how the G1 works.
So it's pretty much the same, except they're keeping it at 2 blocks. We didn't expand to the 4 blocks that a lot of people don't enjoy. And there's 26 participants this year.
That's
so it's nearly the same.
Yeah.
There's 13 people per block. It's exactly the same. Not all their shows are live, though. That's the real trick here. Like, unlike the G1, Stardom does not have all their GP shows live. So, like, for example, I'm currently sitting here waiting for shows to be uploaded so that we can review it this week, right?
Right.
And that's the one trick with Stardom is that they'll do the live pay-per-view. So the first opening weekend, live pay-per-view for day 1, day 2 of the tournament. You know, I did a live show for that really quickly on the Fight Game Media YouTube page. And then we talked about it, me and Parker talked about it in depth. But when you're waiting for it, you really don't know when it's going to be uploaded. It'll be uploaded within that week. But, for example, this Thursday, there's a Cork and Hall show that has, I think, 11 tournament matches on it. And it's like, okay, so I gotta watch all these. I gotta watch all those. I'm probably gonna save the Cork and Hall ones until next. Well, not even next week because I'm not here. So like, it's playing the game here. I might do, you know, like that's the game because they usually are weekend events usually, but they will have, if there's a holiday, a Japanese holiday, they will do a show on that day because more people can go. So that's the game you play. It is like the G1, though the time limits are 15 minutes, not 30 minutes. So it's a lot easier to take in. Like, you may see all those matches. I think there's 156 to be exact in the entire tournament. But it's easy when, you know, the opening matches are going 6-7 minutes, and then the later ones are going maybe 15. Like the most recent, like the Utami Shuri rematch, it went 14:56. So it's easy to digest, but that is the nuts and bolts of that tournament. But I think it's the most exciting tournament to watch. Obviously, I have a little bias here, but it's so exciting because avoiding spoilers is the tough part. I don't do that because, I cover it for Fightful,
right.
So like, I'm getting those results up. But I know people that try to do that. It is what it is. It's still fun to watch. They'll have live shows throughout the tournament, and then the final day, guaranteed live show. So that's how it really goes.
All right, so the tournament, as far as the quality, how would you rate this year so far? Okay, how far are we into it? Because it's only been
two weekends. Yeah, so we're in 2 weekends in. I thought the first weekend was outstanding. The first night was on par with last year's, and last year's might be the best full tournament I've seen. And when I say full tournament, I watch every single match. I watch every single match of last year's tournament. I watched every single match of last year's G1, for example. And I thought this one was far better. Obviously, New Japan's dealing with different, you know, they don't have their full roster at the time, but that's the beauty of this Stardom roster. They have their whole roster at all times. They're bringing in outsiders from other Joshi Promotions, and it's really helping them keep it fresh. But we're 2 weeks in. The opening night was one of their best shows of the year, which is saying a lot because I go on record, I don't think Stardom misses with their pay-per-views. It's like worth every penny every time I buy one. But yeah, I think it's up to standards. I'm still waiting to see this weekend's, but so far so good, because when you even have like the top star against one of the rookies, it's still quality stuff. And I think it's why you watch these tournaments, to see wrestlers grow too. And that's really what you'll see if you watch it from beginning to end. There's no better time to jump in than right now. And all of these shows, whether it's pay-per-view or the weekend shows, they do get uploaded to stardomworld.com, where you can check them all out. So definitely jump in if you haven't yet.
Do they have any U.S. or American announcers, or is it all in Japanese?
So they have done English commentary. For anyone that watches Pro Wrestling Noah, Stuart Fulton, their lead announcer, he's been utilized as their head English commentator. So I'm guessing he's going to be there. They do only do it for their major shows. Like the IWGP Women's World Title, which they've said, okay, this might be defended on major shows.
Sure.
That's when they do English commentary. They won't do it for their like B-level pay-per-views. They actually haven't done it in a few months, but obviously that comes down to who's available. And they have some roster members that speak English as well, so they'll do the color commentary if they're available. So that's the fun part of it. Unfortunately, not everything. And even the house shows. House shows have no commentary. So that's just watching wrestling matches and moving on. And I know a lot of people, commentary is a big piece of them being a part of it because it explains it. But that's why you listen to the Five Star Joshi Show. We'll explain it for you after the fact. but yeah, it's hit or miss on the English commentary, but they do have it.
All right. So as far as this tournament is concerned, as it is going so far, who are the names that you expect to kind of be in the running now with 13 wrestler brackets? I'm sure that some of the drama of the show is to make as many people as possible still live, you know, as you get near the end. But, you know, who are you looking at going like, you know, I'm pretty sure this person is going to be close to being, you know, to being there at the end.
So Julia has been my like for sure she's winning. She was my for sure last year, and then she got hurt, so she had to miss the rest
of it. That's right.
But we're doubling down this year, and the best part is she went 0-2 on the opening weekend. So it's like, but you know, you have that classic story of can't she build herself back? So she's one of the favorites. Utami is another favorite. Interesting part is no one's ever won the tournament twice. So if Utami were to do it, she'd be the second, first ever to win it twice. I always count Mayu Iwatani in that conversation. Obviously, I'm naming big names here, but like they are always in the convo. And then there's like an outsider, like someone like a Suzu Suzuki or Risa Sarah. Suzu Suzuki, for those who watch her, she's fantastic. She's only 19 years old. And it's actually crazy how good she is for her age. A legitimate prodigy, someone that has been locked into Stardom storylines all year. She's not signed with them, but she is a possibility. And Risa Sarah, like I said, she's the leader of Suzu Suzuki's Joshi group, which is prominence. She's a vet. She's a two-time world champion, another promotion called Ice Ribbon, which is a big big one for Parker. If anyone follows Parker, knows him, that's his favorite promotion. So those are a couple of the favorites. And then, of course, there's the champions, Shuri and Saya Kamatani. But I never consider champions to win, even though Shuri did win last year.
Now, we saw Io come back to WWE at SummerSlam. I don't know if she was thinking about going back to Japan, but I know it was very much, you know, hey, like I need to be main roster or I'm doing something else. And also people would remember Kairi. What's she up to? Is she in this tournament?
She is not in the tournament, but they have a pay-per-view upcoming this, I believe it's August 21st. She's having her first title match back, Wonder of Stardom Championship against Saya Kamatani. Heavy favorite to win. She's just as good as she was, whether it was WWE or before WWE. And like you brought up Io Shirai, I really thought she was going to be coming back. I do think that Triple H getting a little power in WWE probably changed that, because,
yeah,
you know, I had an interview with Utami actually for Fightful, and she single-handedly named Io Shirai as her dream opponent. And the Stardom wrestlers don't often just say things.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a thing they do. So I do think there was a real chance she would have came back. But as Dave Meltzer reported, her dream was really to make the main roster.
Sure.
And now she's doing that. So it's good for her. It makes sense. But I do think one day she'll be back. But Kairi's doing great, so that's cool.
Okay, let's talk about this crossover show that is happening, Stardom and New Japan. What are your expectations as both a Stardom and New Japan fan as far as the quality? I saw that there's going to be some intergender, or is it mixed tag stuff that they're going to do? Yep. And I know that doesn't necessarily vibe with a lot of U.S. fans. Like, they have their thoughts on whether or not that you see it on the indies a lot. You don't really, WWE doesn't do it. AEW, have they done it? I can't remember if they've done it yet. I don't think so.
Maybe a spot in a match, but I don't think they've done like the official intergender matches.
But what do you think about that show? What do you think about the idea, the combining the big companies combined together for one show? Is that going to be a pretty interesting show to you?
Absolutely. I think it should be an annual show that they have planned every single year, because the best way to spread Stardom fans and get people interested is to have them wrestle on New Japan shows. If you watch Wrestle Kingdom this year, you saw that Stardom tag on the show. They actually got on the pay-per-view this year rather than being a dark match. I think it's very smart. You know, the idea that you maybe have Hiroshi Tanahashi and Mayu Iwatani team up is exciting, or Okada and Utami Hayashishita. Like, those are just smart ideas. But I believe the Kidani, who may be the Bushi Road president, who obviously is like owns both of them, he said he wants Stardom to main event that show. So that alone is massive for them. And as we know, the IWGP Women's Championship was announced, which is really exciting. And I expect that match to main event that show, actually.
And do you sense, so now, utilizing the New Japan Strong Show brand, which is out here in the U.S., getting Joshi out in front of a U.S. audience, it's very interesting. We have... in WWE and AEW, there's a difference in sort of quality of women's wrestling, I would say. When WWE wants to do it really well, they can do it really well. And when they take their foot off the gas, it can be not so great. And I know AEW is, they're in some, you know, learning stages, and there's been some good stuff, and then they kind of pulls back down. I would say inconsistent is a good way to describe it. But bringing over the Stardom brand over to New Japan Strong and putting that in front of an audience is a very interesting move. And so the question is really, do you think that style can really work for this audience?
I do think it can. They oftentimes, when you see Stardom wrestlers, they really put care into all their work. And I don't know if they're going to be facing independent wrestlers, AEW wrestlers when they come over, but that's the excitement in it all. If you're putting on say they do one of the New Japan Strong pay-per-view shows like Music City Mayhem, and they put an IWGP Women's title match on there, you instantly just create interest, I think, in the promotion, because, oh, it's a title match. Let me check it out. And I know a lot of people that are New Japan fans and Stardom fans that are really excited for this. And I know there's some Stardom fans that are like, I don't know about this. Because, you know, they want the wrestlers to just be successful in every way they can. And you watch AEW, right? Like, Miyu Yamashita just came over and faced Thunder Rosa for the AEW Women's World Championship on TV. And that had mixed reviews, because obviously there was placement of the matches, which did bother people. But the way New Japan Strong airs, right, is that they cut every taping up. So it's like you'll never have to worry about where that booking is. And then with New Japan Strong, which I think is a good show most weekends that they air, you give them time, right? There's no time limit at these shows. This isn't a TV show. There's no, hey, we got to get out of here. So I think that's why I really like where they're going here, rather than trying to do what a TJPW is doing and trying to just, hey, let's just splash them onto AEW television once in a while, where, listen, they don't have all that time in the world to show out. Even on AEW Dark, they don't get that much time. So
yeah,
I think it's perfect. This was my preference. If they were going to come to America, be on these New Japan shows, because they have the time. You're more likely to have fans that are there to see that than not to. So I think it's a really good move.
All right, I was watching, we were talking about the Kurt Angle documentary before. I was watching the Bellas documentary. I actually liked it. I thought it was pretty good.
I was told it was really good. Yeah, actually,
it was good. I mean, yeah, you know, whether or not if you think they should be of the importance enough, and I think they are definitely of the importance, sure, to, because of that Divas show and because of sort of changing the Divas to what we have now. They were a part of it. They weren't the big the biggest part of it, but they were definitely part of it. They reminded me, or the documentary reminded me, that Nikki Bella was in the main event of the Evolution show against Ronda Rousey. And so I started to wonder, in the US, outside of independent shows, I know Thunder Rosa is doing some women's shows, there is not an active company that is women only. I know there's Women of Wrestling, which is more of a TV show, the WOW TV show, the sort of the new glow that I would say, I don't know if they're going to be a touring promotion. Right. They're definitely a syndicated TV show, but as I was watching the Evolution show, I was reminded how fun that show was, for one, how different it felt, especially under that WWE banner. And then it made me think, could something like Stardom, obviously there's a lot of you're it's a startup, so you have to sort of build from scratch, but I don't know, maybe there's an offshoot of the New Japan Strong US promotion. Could an all women's company work in the US, do you think?
It's such a fun question, because you bring up Evolution, and that's a show that people talk about to this day of like, hey, let's do an Evolution 2. Let's, run with that. And the reason Evolution works so well is because, as much as people don't want to hear it, is because of having Nikki Bella and Ronda Rousey in the main event. They were your biggest names at the time, but I do think you could run another one of those. And to the Stardom point, If you run those shows, obviously you have to be smart with location and the amount that you do. So like New Japan Strong runs what, at least once a month probably for their recordings. I think if you were to do it, you'd have to do like every other month, something like that. And I think it could work. You got to pick the right locations. You got to figure out where there's interest. So obviously California jumps out because that's really where New Japan's based. But there are shows like on the indies, for example. So Deadlock Pro, they bring in a lot of Joshi wrestlers from other promotions to be on their shows. I think you can get enough people in a building. It's just a matter of being smart about it. You got to run the right building. You got to run the right location. And you got to not do it too much. Mm-hmm. I think it can work. It takes time, because like you said, they may not be a startup Japan wise because ticket sales, they're probably number two right now, right behind New Japan's huge, but they're behind New Japan, but that's pretty much it. So they're doing great there, but you gotta slowly build them up. So I think if you use those New Japan Strong shows, you keep putting them on the big New Japan shows and hopefully keep bringing eyes to the Stardom product, because in the end, they have more eyes on their product than any other Joshi promotion. And, you see other Joshi wrestlers from every other promotion come over except for Stardom. So I do think it can work. You just got to be smart about it. You don't want to run too much. Like, you gotta pick your shots. And that's really with any startup kind of thing. You got to pick your spots. You got to pick the right location. You got to not run too much. But if you give a card that's worth seeing and you get your biggest names over there, that's what's going to sell. We saw it with New Japan, because New Japan went through that as well when they came over to the U.S. with Strong. Obviously, Strong started off in pretty much a warehouse, but they were doing U.S. shows, a tour. Like, I went to one where Tanahashi and Okada were on it, and that's why I went.
Yeah,
so you bring Utami, you bring Mai, you bring Julie, you bring at least two of them, people are going to go. I think that's how that works. You bring your biggest stars, people are going to go.
All right, a couple of quick hitters here, and then we'll let you go. Favorite G1 match so far of the 2022 Climax?
Oh, G1 Climax or Five Star Grand Prix?
No, sorry. The G1 Climax.
Oh, Ospreay and Shingo?
Yeah, I just saw that today. That was great stuff.
Yeah.
Favorite U.S. promotion TV show?
Dynamite.
That I would say Dynamite too, and it's the one that I watch every week, except for when I was on vacation. I didn't watch one of the weeks. But I think they're leaving a little bit of wiggle room open here. They're not as consistently good, I would say, as they were this time last year. Okay. Favorite U.S. wrestler to watch?
Ooh, that's a good one. Probably Danielson, Bryan Danielson. If not him, Moxley or Sasha Banks whenever she wrestles again.
Sasha Banks, yeah. Sasha Banks, so good. Favorite Joshi wrestler to watch?
Mayu Iwatani.
Favorite male wrestler? It doesn't even have to be Japanese, but just in whether it's in NOAH or DDT or New Japan or All Japan, favorite male wrestler in Japan to watch?
Keep it very original. Hiroshi Tanahashi. Hasn't changed.
The last baby face is what I like to call him.
That's a good one. I like that.
All right. That's about it. I was so excited to bring you on. You've been doing great work for Fight Game Media, that podcast. You've created a fan base with that podcast. And, you know, those folks, those subscribers, they very much look forward to when that show comes out. So nice job, you and Parker as well. Parker, obviously, people know that he's on the F4W website. He writes the AEW Dynamite recap every week. But keep it going. Good luck. Anything else that you would like to plug before we get out of here?
Yeah, I'm going to plug my Fightful stuff because I just actually had an interview come out today with Miyu Yamashita today as of this recording. Please check that out. That's the first audio interview I've had. And also, by the time you're listening to this, there should be another Stardom interview coming out ahead of their Stardom X Stardom show. And please keep listening to the Five Star Joshi show. It's my favorite thing to do every week. It's so easy. It's so much fun. But yeah. Thank you. Thank you for listening to me talk for 30 minutes about this too.
You know what you need? You need one of those websites where it just links all of your stuff. That's what you need.
I do. I have like a link tree in my but I need like a flashier one. Hey, here's the million things I do. I need a flashier one.
Don't worry. We'll put your Twitter handle in the both in the recap of the YouTube video and of the podcast too. So
awesome.
People will be able to find you if they want to search you out. So Scott Edwards, AKA Scott E Wrestling, thank you for joining. So for Scott, I'm Double G. We'll see you when we see you. Peace out.